one thing is that the Yuga Dharma is for everyone in this age of Kali. There's not like one Yuga Dharma for one man and another Yuga Dharma for someone else. So if you're doing the Yuga Dharma, or trying to do the Yuga Dharma, by performing Nam Sankirtan, then you can't be going very wrong. And whether you do it here or whether you do it somewhere else, it's always better to do direct devotional activities than indirect devotional activities. Directly hearing, chanting, remembering, worshiping the deity. Padasevana was also there for some worship of Tulsi. These are considered to be Padasevana. Nine classes of devotional service, offering your everything, ultimately. But it does mention in the scriptures, you know, you can't just throw out the statements of your acharyas, you can't just throw out the statements of the scriptures. It says of all the nine processes, Nam Sankirtan is the most important and most complete. That all of the processes are included within Nam Sankirtan. The benefit of any other process which was ordained for any other age and more benefit than what you can get in other ages is achievable by performing Nam Sankirtan. So if you're performing Nam Sankirtan in this age of Kali, then you're on the right track. There may be other services which are important in certain respects, but at least we understand that Harinam Sankirtan as the Yuga Dharma is the prime methodology for becoming self-realized in the age of Kali.
When I asked my temple friends
about
the same kind of question, what should I be doing? How should I do?
He says you just find out by asking your temple president what he wants you to do. Right? No.
Well, he said,
what did he say?
Krishna puts you in the... Krishna arranges it for you. So, basically, I said they shouldn't give up all our attempts to try and find something better. And he said, like, Krishna will put me in a place it's most suitable for me. And so at this stage, wherever he's put me, basically the conclusion is,
stay where you are, stay put and do whatever you're doing. What the circumstances that, but that's a convenient way of manipulating the situation in favor of the fulfillment of the temple manager's desires. And, you know, we see that happening so often. They try to, just like one time, this is a slightly different kind of discussion, but I was complaining that I wasn't satisfied with the way things were going on and the way devotees were behaving in relationship to me in one temple in America where I happened to be. So then at that time, one of the managers, vice president or whoever he was, I can't remember exactly what was his position, but I remember him coming across with this philosophy that, well, Krishna is the fulfiller of all desires. So the only reason why you're here is because you've desired to be here. Which in certain respects was true, because if I desired to do something else, I wouldn't be there. Probably I would be somewhere else. You know, like if you didn't desire to join the Hare Krishna movement, you wouldn't have joined the Hare Krishna movement in Sydney, you know, or wherever you joined. Was it Sydney? Were you joined? No, I don't remember.
No, it's a small town where I was living.
Yeah.
And then I went to Brisbane for 2 weeks, Brisbane Temple.
Yeah.
And met someone who was meant to be traveling, getting trained up to do books with.
Yeah.
And ended up just in Sydney Temple.
You ended up in Sydney?
Yeah.
Is that the end of your journey? So anyway, the point is that when he said like that I wouldn't be here, don't blame the circumstances, don't blame anyone else, blame your desire. You desired to be here, so therefore just accept the circumstances in terms of the fact that whatever experiences you're getting here is on account of the fact that you desired to be here. I desired to join the Radha Damodar Party, and because I desired to join the Radha Damodar Party, gradually I was able to gain release from the grip of my temple president in Washington, D.C. Because I desired, I had an ardent desire to join Radha Damodar for traveling and preaching with the brahmacharis and sannyasis without having women around all the time. You know?
Can I ask a question? Why is it that when a sannyasi who is the jewel of the renounced order of life comes to the brahmachari ashram at our greenhouse, that all of these women appear out of nowhere in the brahmachari ashram? But when there's no sannyasi there, and just brahmacharis, then there's no women. But when the sannyasi and the maharaj and the guru maharaj come, then there's all these women all over the place. That is my question.
To get the answer to that question, my suggestion is that you should intensify your chanting of Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Krishna Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama.
A little humor in this business.
Yeah, so the point we had was that because I was attached to the idea of traveling and preaching with the brahmacharis and sannyasis, so then I stuck it out with them. And wherever that took me, because of my attachment based on desire to be with them, you know, or to be a part of that program, and I ended up in Chicago, and because the Radha Damodar Party kind of like kaputzed, that's where I ended up. My desires brought me to that position of being in such a situation which was virtually intolerable for me because of various dealings between the management and myself. So then when he said like that why are you blaming us, or why are you blaming the circumstances, you should blame your own desire, because it is by your desire that you happen to be here. And I said, oh really? Is it only just because I desire that I come here and remain here and have to experience whatever, let's say, unpalatable experiences that I'm experiencing under these circumstances? Well then, I desire to take your leave. And I'll go to Vrindavan.
Who'd you say that to?
Anyway, but so I desire. If you're saying that everything is happening because of a desire, then all I have to do is change my desire. So I decide right now at this point to change my desire, and I'm desiring to find myself in another situation. So therefore I'm repairing to Vrindavan Dham.
Did they utter a reply to that?
Yes, then they gave me an ultimatum that either I had to surrender, but that if I was going to Vrindavan, then I couldn't stay another night in the temple. And they wouldn't let me do any sankirtan for the purpose of collecting my ticket. I just had to pack my bags and take a hike, because it appears that my presence here would undermine their authority. So then I said, Hari Bol. I packed my bags, took my deities, and hit the road. So the thing is that in certain respects it's true. Where there's a will, there's a way. Everything is based on desire. By desire you come to this material world, and by desire you're going to get out of this material world. If you desire to remain in this material world, then you're not going to take the necessary steps to become freed from material entanglement or whatever. So it's just a question of exercising your own intelligence as to what you perceive to be the most advantageous for your advancement in Krishna consciousness. If you can understand that by living in Mayapur or living in Vrindavan, these two dhams, where you get 1,000 times the benefit of your devotional activities, if you can keep your nose clean, so to speak, in Vrindavan Dham, and engage nicely in devotional activities, then with every round you chant, you're getting the benefit in your transcendental bank account of 1,000 rounds. And during Kartik, you get the benefit of 1,000,000 rounds for every round that you chant in Vrindavan Dham. With every kirtan that you perform, you get the benefit of having performed 1,000 kirtans any time of the year, or 1,000,000 kirtans during Kartik, or 16,000,000 kirtans during Purushottam month. So if you can understand that here's a golden opportunity for me to get lifetimes worth of advancement in Krishna consciousness by getting lifetimes worth of transcendental credits in my spiritual bank account, which amounts to Krishna Punya Punja, by which I can hope to dance with Krishna, to play with Krishna, face to face, eye to eye, in his leelas, then why not? The facility is here. You've proven to yourself that it's possible for you to get from there to here this time, so that you can always do it again, if Krishna is willing. So, if Krishna is willing to fulfill your desire,
to take advantage of that golden opportunity to spend my life in such a way that I get lifetimes and lifetimes worth of advancement in Krishna consciousness, then why not do it? Why let anyone or anything keep you bound to a situation where you could hardly make as much spiritual advancement as if you allowed your desire to take you somewhere else and accepted that that is Krishna's arrangement. It's Krishna's arrangement that there's a Vrindavan Dham on this planet to resort to. It's Krishna's arrangement that there is such a thing as Harinam Sankirtan that can be performed in Vrindavan Dham. It's Krishna's arrangement that you're on this planet. You're not just in the Sydney temple, you're on this planet. So you have to look at the broader picture and see what Krishna's arrangement is, what you can possibly do on the basis of having taken birth on this planet. The planet provides you the opportunity to be associated with the Holy Dham and make leaps and bounds of spiritual progress. If you feel too timid to take up residence in Vrindavan because you're just a neophyte beginner in devotional service more or less, so maybe I'm not advanced enough to take advantage of such an opportunity. If you feel like that, then by all means, take shelter of Navadvipa. Take shelter of Mayapur and get the same benefit there with less chances of getting the amplified reactions, you know, to committing offenses. In Vrindavan Dham, you get 1,000 times the reactions to your offenses if you engage in sinful activities or mundane activities or whatever here, operatum. But in Mayapur, you don't get 1,000 times the reactions to your offenses. But you do get 1,000 times the benefit. Or a million times the benefit during Kartik in Mayapur. So the most intelligent thing would be to go to Mayapur for the beginners, or for the neophytes. And then after having gained considerable advancement, you know, by the mercy of Mayapur Dham, then take shelter of Vrindavan. But if that doesn't appeal to you, as it in certain respects didn't appeal to me, because I didn't really appreciate the ISKCON managerial atmosphere there when I first went there in 1983. There were certain things about the ISKCON setup that I didn't appreciate that were not here in Vrindavan. In other words, Vrindavan was definitely more like home. And at that time, maybe more so than now, it was like an international demilitarized zone, so to speak.
What was that, here or Mayapur?
Here in Vrindavan. Mayapur, there was still kind of a militant scene going there, the GDC meetings, the whole. But I remember when I came to Vrindavan the first time in 1981, that was like 8 years or so after I had joined the movement. It was the first time I was able to come to Vrindavan because I was always being hoodwinked into accepting responsibility for Prabhupada's book distribution. Either I didn't meet my quota, or even if I did meet my quota, then
you didn't meet your quota, so you can't go to the festival.
Can't go to the festival. Or else, even if I did meet my quota, they had to use whatever money I had for getting out of the big black hole, you know. And so there was not enough money to give anybody an opportunity to go to Vrindavan. Either that or else everyone else gets to go to the festival, but because I was a pujari, the pujari was like a rare commodity or something, so someone had to take care of the deities, so I was always having to take care of the deities while everybody else goes to the festival. So then, okay, I figured that maybe this is Krishna's plan. Maybe my anxiety and desperation for one day being able to go to the Holy Dham, that would increase my adhikar for appreciating the Dham once I finally got a chance to go. But anyway, in 1981, when I said toodaloo to Chicago Temple, I went to Vrindavan, and they were suggesting that I should work under Jaipataka Maharaj in Mayapur, but I came to the Delhi airport, and I came to Vrindavan, and at the Mathura train station, someone cut the pocket where my wallet was and stole everything that I had, and I didn't even have enough money to get on the bus. So I got on the bus anyway, and halfway down the road when they were coming around collecting tickets, and they realized that I didn't have a ticket, he was barking at me like anything, and I was touching his feet, begging him, please, please, this time just once. And so then somehow or other, he dumped me off at the bus depot. So I got away with it, and then I jumped on a rickshaw, and I didn't have any money for the rickshaw either. And when I got to the temple and I didn't have any money, the rickshaw man was furious. But then I got Kapa Moy, who was in charge of the guest house, to promise him that if he came back tomorrow, that he would get his fare. And then I had to scrounge up 15 rupees or whatever it was on the bus stand to here, 10 rupees or something, 5 rupees from the bus stand to here. at that time. I guess it was 5 rupees back then. From somewhere, somebody. I got it from somebody. And there I was, penniless, nothing. No way I was going to go to Mayapur. So I said, anyway, this is Prabhupada's home. Let me be happy in Vrindavan.
Was that the first time you'd ever been here? I mean, actually,
yeah, yeah.
Laid eyes on the place?
Yeah.
Came in that condition.
Yeah.
Like, was like, yeah. The rickshaw guy yelling and screaming, and where's my money? And
yeah. That time I had a return ticket to America. Anyway, then I engaged in some deity worship, and unfortunately, I wasn't able to appreciate so much the racist mentality of the Bengali pujaris, so we didn't get along too good in the room together. So then I took all my luggage, I had a box, a tin box, and I took it up to the roof and I chained it onto the rail around the roof of the Gurukul, and I camped out on the roof. But unfortunately, the head pujari, my dear godbrother Omkar, was like such a despot that, you know, it was like, it was just outrageous, the kind of dealings that, you know, it was like I jumped out of Chicago frying pan into the fire of Omkar's totalitarian and authoritarian horror show, you know. So then at a certain point I just got totally disgusted, and I was reading the Preaching of the Essence book and decided that I'm going back to America. And I don't care, I'm not going to work under any authority. I'm just going to hit the road and preach according to my own sweet will. So I got to New York City because I had a plan of making a festival program that would travel from carnival to carnival. You know, they have, I don't know if it's the same in Australia, but they have these county fairs or state fairs in America. They have Ferris wheel rides and all kinds of sideshows, you know, and barns with livestock,
fireworks,
shows, and all kinds of stuff. So I thought that I would make some kind of a truck where I would have like a mobile stage that I could go set up in the middle of the carnival and just be a Hare Krishna sideshow like that and just go from carnival to carnival. That was my idea. But then when I got to New York, I realized that it was like a fair every day without having to go anywhere, you know, because it was like just tons and tons of opportunities for preaching. Just walk out on the street anywhere. The whole place was alive day and night. New York never sleeps. So then I thought that why bother going anywhere and everywhere? It's better to just perform Harinam Sankirtan in New York City. So then I developed a program there for a few years.
I mean, the Tolson and Hansarupa, they weren't giving you a problem when, in the Seventh Avenue period, right?
No, there was no problem there.
You had your little thing and you had it stored like on the ground floor. And
yeah.
Supposedly one day would be restaurant.
Yeah, right. Yeah. Yeah,
I kind of remember, like, they were more or less happy that you were there. At least there was something going on.
Yeah, me and Rasatala, we would
go out together. It was such a miserable situation, you know, that any...
But then, you know, after 5 years of struggle in New York City, I did something a little nice. It wasn't so bad. I did make a few devotees, so to speak. I say make a devotee. Brought a few people to Krishna consciousness with my program. But then all hell started breaking loose with gurus falling down and this and that and the other and various other sundry political upheavals. And I said, the hell with this crap. I'm going to Vrindavan. So then I decided...
Have you gone between 81 and 83?
Yeah, I went...
In 83.
In 83 I went. In 85 also I went for Kartik and Vrindavan. And in 83, I went to Jagannath Puri, Bhuvaneshwar, Mayapur, and Vrindavan. But in 1986, when I finally tossed in the towel, because it was Lord Chaitanya's 500th anniversary, I thought that I would go to Mayapur. But during that time, there were all these prophet disciples, Istogosthis, and whatnot. Emergency measures were being taken to either... whatever, the temple presidents and the general body of prophet disciples was going to cast a vote of no confidence in the GBC and disband the GBC if the GBC didn't take heed of the complaints of the people.
The end of the zonal acharyas,
yeah.
11 gurus, and that's it.
That was the collapse of that whole scene, basically. But after attending the temple president's meeting, it was like a general Istogosthi for all prophet disciples, and it was so disgusting that by the time the Mayapur festival was over, I decided that, okay, let me go to Kumbh Mela in Haridwar. So I went to Kumbh Mela and took bath and whatnot to purify my existence from all the politics and whatnot, and then I decided that, okay, let me come to Vrindavan. And I was just about ready to just jump in the Yamuna and say Hari Bol to the world of...
Really?
Just comes...
You were actually thinking like...
Yeah, I just felt it, forget it. I don't want to continue living in this condition. I'll jump in the Yamuna, and because I knew that by jumping in Yamuna and drowning in Yamuna, you attain Golok Dham. So I was almost ready to do that. I felt like that. I felt so disturbed and disgusted with the way the movement was, you know, if you want to call it, progressing. So, but then when I got to Vrindavan, and I didn't have a penny, didn't have, you know, one paisa by the time I got to Vrindavan. I had a couple mouth amplifiers and a couple microphones and a folding harmonium and a dolak for traveling, some whoppers and some car tolls. And I saw that there was no kirtan at all. Nothing. Kushne, nothing going on in the temple here. Nothing.
Therefore, artik?
They had artik, but there was hardly any kirtan at all. And at that time, I basically again started reviving interest in attending the Gaur Arti Kirtan, and I spent like 8 hours a day just chanting alone in the temple with nobody helping me, and I would have to periodically bark at the devotees back in the paraphernalia stall who would turn on a new jalota or, you know, some cassette which would be interfering with my kirtan because they were used to just playing a tape back there, and there was no kirtan in the temple whatsoever. So then,
it wasn't in those days. There weren't so many people streaming through, like, you know, but they like the song, but they sit down.
It was not nearly like today. No.
Any time of the day, every day, any time of the day, people just come and sit with the kirtan.
Well, no, I would just, you know, some baba came through the temple and I would say, you know, hey, you, come, sit down, play this mridanga. No, I don't know how to play. Play it anyway. You know, another man would come through. It didn't matter whether he was a ISKCON devotee or not ISKCON devotee. And I just wanted to get something going. And then whoever I can get, I consider it as Krishna's mercy. Krishna sent Krishna's arrangement. Here I am in Vrindavan Dham. There's nobody interested in doing kirtan. So whoever I can get, outside man, inside man, didn't matter. You just come here, sit down, play, help.
And we would dance and two legs, we would, and
we would start to, we would do kirtan, and gradually a few other devotees started taking interest, and then gradually more devotees started at least lending some moral support to the idea, and then finally some devotees started suggesting that maybe I should try to start 24-hour kirtan. And then the old accountant, when Prabhupada was here, Prabhupada used to call him Kapoorji. He was an old Brijvasi accountant. And he came to me one morning with tears in his eyes, telling me that Prabhupada had just appeared to him in a dream, crying to him, Prabhupada in the dream was crying, asking Kapoorji that why is there no 24-hour kirtan going on in my temple. So then when Kapoorji was telling me that, I took it as this was the indication that Prabhupada wanted, because Kapoorji was asking me, you like to do kirtan, why don't you try to get it going again for Srila Prabhupada? Then after hearing about Kapoorji's dream, and with his encouragement, I took it as Prabhupada's indication, and because some other devotees were also encouraging me, so then I thought that, okay, let's try, and started out small, and it was still small, ups and downs, but no harm in trying. After all, it's the Yuga Dharma, the Nam Nam. There's no higher place in the material or spiritual world than Braj Mandal, or Golden Mandala. Another thing. No more beautiful deities, in my opinion, than Radhasham Sundar. They're my heartfelt lady and lord of my heart. You know, so I stay here. By my desire, I'm continuing to stay here. Not just by my desire, but by their kind reciprocation with my desire. To allow me to continue to stay here. In spite of my lack of qualification. You know, I figure that any offenses I may have committed or may be committing along the way, it's mentioned that no offense committed in the Dham can be rectified anywhere else but the Dham. So here I stay. And I don't care what anybody says. I'm going to stay in Vrindavan and do kirtan for the benefit of others. Live in the Dham for the benefit of others.
I was talking the other night of that. Needing to have the desire to please Krishna.
Mm-hmm.
I was talking the other night, I think last time, about the desire to please Krishna.
Yeah.
It's most important, so I understand I need to. Can you give me any guidance how I can at least try to find out
what's less pleasing to Krishna?
Well, it says in Srimad Bhagavatam, it says, Krishna Varna Prasha Krishna Sango Pangastra Parshidam Jagyaya Sankirtana Prayar Yajanti Hi Sumedha Sahar. The one who has good brain substance enough to figure this out, that the patik, fallen conditioned souls in this age of Kali, can best access the pleasure of Krishna by endeavoring to please the incarnation of Krishna for this age, Lord Chaitanya, Hare Krishna, golden color, by the performance of Sankirtan Yajna, the congregational chanting of the holy names of Krishna. It's not so difficult to figure out. So surrendering means yadadehi tarikaha Krishna Upadesh. But what is that Krishna Upadesh? Krishna Upadesh means that which Krishna has given you in Bhagavad Gita, and that which is given about Krishna or about transcendence in the Srimad Bhagavatam. So what is the Upadesh? The Upadesh is do Sankirtan Yajna.
Have you always been very musically talented?
I grew up more or less in a musical family, musically inclined family. I had some upbringing like that. But I never played a keyboard in my life until I joined the Hare Krishna movement. And like about maybe 5 years or so after I joined, I first even tried to play a harmonium. And I just started plinking around trying to figure the thing out. And then gradually I was able to get some proficiency by practicing and practicing. Krishna says that he gives the intelligence. Tesham satata yuktanam. Satata yuktanam means always being engaged. Yukta means engagement. Satatam means continuously. Tesham satata yuktanam. In what? Bhajatam priti purvakam. Bhajatam. Krishnendriya priti itsa dhari premanam. Priti means with the desire to satisfy. Bhajatam priti purvakam. With the desire to satisfy Krishna, worshipping Krishna for his satisfaction. So then, if one is constantly engaged in worshipping Krishna for his satisfaction, yajyaya sankirtana prayaya, then yajanti hi sumedha saha. By that sumedha saha, what is a sumedha saha? That is enough intelligence to know that that's what we should be doing, and by doing that, then automatically the dhammi buddhi yogam comes. Krishna gives buddhi, yogam, more intelligence, how to do it more nicely. So, it's possible to improve the abilities by working at it for Krishna's pleasure. Try again. But if for some reason you have no capacity for doing any musical form of sankirtan, then book distribution is always best. Cleaning the temple is always there. Cutting the subject is always there. Rolling the bodies is always there. Cleaning the toilets is always there. It's all part and parcel of the Sankirtan mission. Collecting donations is always there. If you collect donations in Vrindavan, you get 1,000 times the benefit of collecting donations. Collect donations in Vrindavan. For Vrindavan. For the service of Sanatana and Krishna in Vrindavan. You can always do that. But you know, in the meantime, pick up a pair of cardinals and try to learn how to play them so you can be useful to the direct performance of Sankirtan. Prabhupada wanted devotees to be well-rounded devotees. Jack of all services but master of one. Not master of none, master of one. He wanted us to be a little well-rounded. Everyone should know a little how to cook something for Krishna, how to lead a kirtan, how to address the deities, a little of everything. But, you know, proficiency in one, at least one. Book publication, painting for Krishna, you know, whatever. Krishna's arrangement for you, giving you certain capacity to have a particular expertise according to your psychophysical conditioning. But then Krishna can always give you more. Maybe not immediately, but gradually one can increase his capacity, at least to a certain extent. You'll never be able to be like Lord Brahma in this lifetime because you only have one head and one puny little brain. Brahma is a jiva just like you and me. We're all jivas, but according to the body, certain capacities
for service, maybe. Or may not be. You never know unless you try something. Pick up a pair of articles with determination. Practice. Practice makes perfect. There's nothing stopping anyone from making progress in Krishna consciousness. No one's stopping you. And even if they try to stop you, if your determination is enough, no one can stop you. They may blame you this and that way because you went against your temple authorities or whatever. It's like necessity knows no law. It's up to you. With your intelligence, you assess what is valuable, what is not valuable. Ability to see things in proper perspective. Higher than living in Vrindavan for your own personal benefit is to leave Vrindavan for the benefit of others. But there's nothing saying that you can't live in Vrindavan for the benefit of others. So then, if you're going to come to Vrindavan, have the mood of trying to do something for the benefit of others. And then you're not leaving Vrindavan for the benefit of others is legitimate. Because whoever's benefited by your endeavoring to benefit them gets 1,000 times the benefit here than whoever's getting benefited anywhere else in the world. Consider these things. It's up to you. Even if you don't do kirtan service here in Vrindavan or in Mayapur, ample opportunity for service in either place. Just be sincere, be serious, following the principles of pure devotional bhajan, and Krishna will be pleased. You see, Krishna's not pleased if you recognize the value of doing service in his home, in his holy dham. It's by his arrangement that you're able to come. The dham is the land of no return.
Sorry. Andrew, I'm just going here.
You know, and that's why many temple presidents and managers in the West, they're afraid to let their devotees come to Vrindavan because they know that Vrindavan is the land of no return. And they're afraid that they're going to lose men, they're going to lose money, they're going to, you know, this, that, the other, which is basically material calculation. What they should be doing is that they should be training up men so nicely and sending them to Vrindavan to make leaps and bounds of spiritual advancement. And depending on Krishna, to send more men to train up to send to Vrindavan or Mayapur. Because that's the outpost. That's like the embassy. You go to the embassy to get a visa to go to the real country. The embassy is not different from the real country, but the real country is the real country. The embassy is not exactly the real country. So Vrindavan is the real country. And the temple is an embassy. So they should be, instead of denying you the visa to Vrindavan, they should be facilitating your getting a visa to Vrindavan. And not afraid if someone goes back home back to Godhead. You mean to tell me if you go back home back to Godhead tomorrow that your temple president is going to say, well, that blasted useless bum, he went back home back to Godhead. Now I'm losing his collection. What is this nonsense? He is supposed to be making arrangements for that soul to go back home back to Godhead and facilitating his progress back home back to Godhead. If you die tomorrow, who's going to collect to solve the Chapati problems in the temple? So what's the difference between being absent, dying, and going back home back to Godhead, and somehow other being absent, going back home back to Vrindavan? Vrindavan is back to Godhead. The temple president might as well consider that when their devotees go to Vrindavan, that they've gone back home back to Godhead. So therefore, I should continue my preaching and make new devotees to send back home back to Godhead. It's only sensible. Not that, oh, no, we don't want them to go back home back to Godhead, because then we're going to lose men and money. How horrible. That's miserly consciousness. Make a plan. Why not tomorrow? Go back home back to Godhead tomorrow, offering all due respects to your Prabhus who have helped you along the way. Remaining eternally grateful to them, because they helped me to come to the position of being able to, you know, at long last, go back home back to Godhead. Krishna's arrangement. You see? That's the way my intelligence works. Why be held back? You know, it's like the husband holding back the gopis when Krishna calls the gopis for Maharasa. You think I'm going to listen to my husband? My superiors. I'm going to listen to my superiors? When Krishna calls, when opportunity knocks, I'm going to answer. I'm going to get the hell out of wherever I am, the confines of the citadel of my husband's home. And go back home, back to Godhead. Join the Rasa Leela and the Nada.
How can I justify saying But if I was to live in Vrindavan, I would have to do it with serving others, consciousness of doing it for the benefit of others.
Yeah.
How can I say I couldn't, you know, like you obviously doing great benefit in your kirtan, if I couldn't do it, anything like that, if I was, you know, sweeping floors and
that's like assisting. That's also for the benefit of others. It's for the benefit of the deities. Have a nice clean temple. It's for the benefit of the public who comes to see the nice temple. Benefit of Srila Prabhupada, so that the public is getting a nice impression which reflects on Srila Prabhupada's mission.
But when there's so many others that can be doing that job.
You can be one of them.
But then
anybody can do it.
My assistants in preaching in Australia, there's not so many people.
You know what Srila Prabhupada said? Prabhupada told Harikesh Prabhu, maybe still Prabhu, I don't know, but Prabhupada told Harikesh that a head cook in Vrindavan is better than a GVC anywhere else in the world. Prabhupada told one devotee who was doing service in the Goshala that he considered that his service to the Goshala here in Vrindavan was more important than opening 20 farm communities in the West, like New Vrindavan. The devotee was telling Srila Prabhupada that he was thinking that maybe he should leave the Goshala service and go back to America and start up another farm community like New Vrindavan. The Prabhupada said that he much valued the service that he was doing in the Goshala than the opening up of a whole farm community, 20 of them. And also Srila Prabhupada said that if for any reason all other centers of ISKCON, including Sydney, have to close down, but Vrindavan and Mayapur must remain open at all costs. Which certainly expresses Srila Prabhupada's consideration of the relative value of these two places, Vrindavan and Mayapur, in comparison to any other place in the world.
So I see the, I guess, appealing side of seeing everything as Krishna's arrangement wherever I'm put. But I guess, I mean, Krishna's put me in this situation right here.
Also,
just as much as when he put me in front of the temple president.
Exactly. Why limit Krishna? It's Krishna's arrangement also that you happen to somehow find yourself in Aindradasa's room hearing what Aindradasa has to say about it.
The second time, the first people I moved in with had very similar views as usual.
Yeah.
And then my mind has changed and then I've come back to this by looking at him.
Yeah. The point is that if I'm chanting japa with the idea that I want to increase my Krishna consciousness so that sometime in the future I'll be able to do the highest good for others, then chanting of japa as a preparation for future preaching services is doing service in Vrindavan for the benefit of others. In Vrindavan you're getting 1,000 times the benefit of your japa. So you can hope that by chanting japa in Vrindavan, you'll expedite your progress to the position of being able to act in the capacity as a benefactor.
One shining moon, how much light it can give compared to all the little stars.
Yes, out there you're like a star, but here you're like 1,000 times a star.
Here you can make a moon. Vrindavan, then the moon can go out and lit up the whole material world.
I think I have the potential to be a moon, but...
Yeah, but the point is that I'm a microbe, but if you add 1,000 microbes together, you might at least get a honeybee.
The president the other day said that he has a machine that a lot of machines use. So if you're not going to worship him one day, maybe a few years.
You want to worship Nishimide? Is that your heart's desire? Huh? So, that's very nice of him to
It's up to you what you want to do with your Krishna consciousness. My point is that it's like sometimes due to our instability of mind or our immaturity, my personal experience is that when you join the Hare Krishna movement, you're basically beaten down into the position of a little kid. Before I joined the Hare Krishna movement, I was walking this world as a man. At least I was walking the world. I would go out into the world and try to make my way in this world. Then when I joined the Hare Krishna movement, I got flim-flammed, bamboozled into accepting the humble position, the humble position, the humble position, to become like a little meek, next to no good for nothing, useless bum of a little kid. And then they use child psychology to extract whatever they want out of me instead of allowing me to be a mature adult human being making a decision and going forward in my Krishna consciousness. That's why people like Ted Patrick would say things like, the Hare Krishnas are a bunch of mindless robots. Because you're not allowed to be a free individual thinker. You're not allowed to exercise your intelligence. Don't think, just do. As I say, when I say jump, you ask how high. So then it's kind of like, as long as you're under that kind of authoritarian thumb, it may be difficult for you to muster up the strength to actually stand up and walk away and do something for Krishna on your own. It's not that just because someone is a new bhakta, it's not that I'm trying to encourage, let's say, independence. I'm not saying that you should be independent of all authority, but you should have enough independence to be intelligent thinker enough to ascertain what is more valuable and make your own decision in your own life as to where you want to go, what you want to do, what you want to be for Krishna, instead of more or less like a servile kamcha. Yes, man. Prabhupada didn't want us to be yes, man. Prabhupada wanted us to be thoughtful men and think for yourself, using the tools that you have, guru, shastra, sadhu, to draw conclusions based on shastra, that such and such and such and such. Intelligence means to see things in proper perspective, to evaluate what is valuable, what is not so valuable. You know, make a decision. Follow it through. And if it doesn't pan out, so to speak, then try something else. But not that we just lick people's boots and become like a pawn on their chessboard. That's okay on one level. But there's a point in every man's life he has to stand up and do what he knows is right for his progress in Krishna consciousness. So then that takes a little maturity. If you're afraid of being a man and feel more comfortable or feel protected, safer, by remaining as a little kid, placing in the hands of the, or whatever, puppet, if that suits you and you feel more satisfied being that in your life, a pawn on somebody else's chessboard. Ultimately, everyone's a pawn on Krishna's chessboard. So ultimately, everyone, even if we become Mahabhagwa, will be puppets in the hands of the eternal associates of Krishna. But we'll have our independence. You know, our independence is to surrender. But to surrender to who? To surrender to what? There's superior and inferior opportunities to surrender.
We should be able to choose unto whom we want to surrender. Not that because he's your temple president, then therefore he's the one who manipulates you. Even when you have doubt about
that, that you're in Maya if you don't accept his authority. The point is that if someone sees a better opportunity and this person is disallowing you to go forward, then what kind of guru is that? Then he becomes rejectable. If someone impedes your progress, then why do we have to hear that? If you're more comfortable thinking that, well, you know, after all, I'm just a new bhakta, I don't know what's best for me, so therefore I should just submit to whatever opinion my present temple authority is having, and I really don't have to poke my nose out of the little cave of my small scope of what reality is all about, and I feel safe in that little niche, then you don't have the desire to go anywhere else. Desire to stay where you are, and Krishna will fulfill that desire. Except that is Krishna's arrangement. But if you can recognize with your intelligence that there is superior facility for advancement in Krishna consciousness, and if you can see within yourself a determination to take advantage of that facility, then go for it. Don't let someone else's small-minded concept of what is valuable or not valuable impede your progress. You can always go back to him and hear him say, I told you so. Beg forgiveness, please forgive me. Easier to get forgiveness than it is to get permission.
taking risk for Krishna includes, everyone talks about taking risk for Krishna. Taking risk for Krishna includes taking the risk of displeasing one authority in order to please Krishna. Yeah, exactly. Coming to an unknown land, a foreign country, kind of like taking a big step. I don't know whether I can handle the environment here physically. I don't know whether I can, but I'm going to try. And if I can't deal with it because I'm just not detached enough from the bodily conception of life, then you know, there's always wisdom.
Oh, you're trying to stay with me now?
He's asking me.
That I should stay.
I'm telling him that he should make his own intelligent decision, what he feels is better. I'm not saying Vrindavan, I'm saying, obviously, the Dhamma is more powerful facility for advancing in Krishna consciousness, either Vrindavan or Maya. And I already made the point that if he's too afraid of committing offenses and getting the thousand times the reactions to offenses, but that kind of axe over your neck that don't commit offenses here, that also can be Krishna's arrangement for making you more serious about improving your bhajan. Of course, some fools, they don't take heed of that point and just do all nonsense in the knowledge. But if you're sincere, there's nothing saying that you have to do nonsense in the knowledge. No one's telling anybody that they have to do nonsense in the knowledge. But if there's a tendency to do nonsense, then go to Maya, of course. At least you don't get a thousand times the reactions to your nonsense. But you get a thousand times the benefit of your chanting your japa for improving your all-round Krishna consciousness, for the ultimate benefit of anyone who comes into your association. When you make all that advancement that you should be able to make by taking advantage of the fast track back home back to Kashi.
Swami, there is a question. I might can clarify on an early sum, so is there from Krishna's point of view, me being an only son in my family,
yeah.
Do I have any responsibility?
Do you have any responsibility to your family?
Yeah.
There's no responsibility at all for anyone who surrenders to Krishna.
No, if your parents are devotees, and Mahaprabhu told Gopalvata, you stay until your father and mother are in this world, because they are devotees, you have to take care of them. But if they are not devotees, like my parents, have no responsibility at all.
At all.
But if they are devotees, you have some responsibility.
Well, but...
And if they are devotees and they think that you should be free, then they expect you to be free.
That is not necessarily the proper conclusion.
This is the example of Lord Nityananda himself leaving home. Even Chaitanya Mahaprabhu left his home, left his mother, his poor mother, widowed, and no one to protect her. Mahaprabhu himself left, showing the example how one has to sacrifice everything to search for the goal of life, to search for Krishna. And there's so many examples.
The point is that it's mentioned the one who surrenders to the lotus feet of Krishna is no longer indebted to the demigods,
yes,
to the sages, to the father and mother, and that's across the board. Why Gopal Bhatta Goswami did that was because he was specifically instructed by Mahaprabhu. It doesn't necessarily mean that that's an example which is to be applied across the board. He was specifically instructed by Mahaprabhu to do like that. But really, one has no debt to anyone. And even if we feel indebted because the parents have brought us up, are your parents devotees? No. So, but even if we feel indebted to them because they, after all, fed us all that sinful bhoga to make us grow up so that at least we could run away to the Hare Krishna movement,
then you
automatically deliver your parents back home back to Godhead by becoming a pure devotee. But then you have to become a pure devotee.
Mm-hmm.
You have to surrender to Krishna and become a pure devotee. There's nothing stopping anyone from becoming a pure devotee. And the highest good is done to your parents. That's what I did. I totally left my family and permanently shifted to Vrindavan. I didn't keep any contact with my family at all. I rarely contacted them even before. But when I came to Vrindavan, it was only after 15 years of living in Vrindavan without having any idea whether my parents were dead or alive. My younger brother traced out my wanderings somehow to the New York temple. And then the president of the New York temple informed him that I had
come to Vrindavan, but that better that he doesn't bother me, but that the temple president would contact me. So they contacted me to tell me that my father was leaving his body, was on the verge of death. So then I more or less said, anyway, so what? Let him be on the verge of death. Don't bother me with these things. So I wasn't thinking to contact my younger brother, because I was thinking that, well, anyway, I'm in Vrindavan, I'm doing service to Shalagram Shila, automatically, generations and generations. Like at the end of Purushottam Vrat, if you give Bhagavatam to a Vaishnava, then you deliver 10 million generations of forefathers by just giving the Bhagavatam to a Vaishnava at the end of Purushottam month Vrat. So I'd already done that several times, just to make sure. So I figured that I've already done my duty. But then, the next morning, before I woke up, I had a dream where someone in my dream, I was being informed by some godly living entity that I should contact my family, my younger brother, and do the needful, because my father, in his previous life, was a fallen disciple of Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, and that the reason that I took my birth in his family was for the purpose of delivering him. So then I immediately got the intelligence, the idea came to me that I'll send him my Tulsi beads. But first I should inquire from them what was his decision about the disposal of his body. Because I remembered that in my childhood, he had taken me to some cemetery where he had bought a cemetery plot for,
this is my place,
for his family and stuff to be entombed as a Christian. So I called to my brother and asked him that was he going to be buried or cremated or what? And then my brother told me that my father had decided that he wanted to be cremated. So then I said, Acha, very good. So then I told him that I would send him Tulsi neck beads. Ganadhar Maharaj happened to be going to that area of the country. So I gave him a letter that I'd written to my father, along with one strand of Tulsi neck beads from my own neck, and told him that this was a gift from his long-lost son as an expression of my love and gratitude toward him, and that he should kindly accept my gift of love by wearing it around his neck. So he agreed to do that. I contacted him once after he left his body and confirmed that he was wearing the Tulsi Mala on his neck when he left his body, and that it remained on his body when he was cremated. In Tulsi Mahatmya, it mentions that even if there's one piece of Tulsi wood in the fire which cremates the body of even the most sinful man, no matter how much sinful activities he performed in his lifetime, if there's one piece of Tulsi wood in that fire which burns the body of that man, then that soul attains the spiritual world. He attains moksha, freedom from repeated birth and death, and goes to the spiritual world, right? So I figured that being prompted by the person that was in my dream, wasn't just a voice, it was a person in my dream telling me, like some angelic kind of elevated devotee person was telling me that no, I should not neglect this. That my father in his previous life was a fallen disciple of Bhaktisiddhanta, and that by Daidinatrina it was arranged that I had taken my birth as his son for the purpose of delivering him. Therefore, I should contact him and do the needful. So then I remembered the statement in Tulsi Mahatmya and thought that I should find out whether or not he's going to be cremated. And when I found out that he was going to be cremated, then I said, Acha, so this is the arrangement for him. And he in fact kept the Tulsi when he was cremated. So then I felt satisfied that I'd done my duty to my father. But I had no idea about my mother, because they were separated, divorced. Although she, in certain respects, was more liberal and favorable. Although my father was not unfavorable, he personally took me to the temple. He more or less donated his son to Srila Prabhupada. Willingly, knowingly, took me to the temple. I remember when he drove me like 60 miles from our farm to the city where the temple was, and that he was asking me that, don't I think that I'm limiting myself, you know, by entering monastic life? And I told him that it looks like it's a limitation, because a monastery is like a small place, but it's like the doorway to the unlimited spiritual world. It's not limiting myself at all.
going from this limited material world to the unlimited spiritual world. And he was satisfied with that argument. And he happily enjoyed the Sunday feast.
But then what was your age?
I was 20. Mm-hmm. 20 years old when I joined the
Christian Church. Nice.
Huh?
Young boy.
Yeah. A little young. You know, the hippie world back then.
Your father maybe thought better he'd be a monk, but he'd be a hippie.
No.
Your father was a hippie.
Yeah, my father was a bohemian himself, more or less.
He was the old hippie.
Yeah. He was smoking ganja before I was smoking ganja. Both my father and mother. You know, I grew up in such a kind of environment. They were experimenting with peyote, mescaline, and various things. He also had tripped on LSD before I had experimented with palm the size of a person. I'm trying to line up the time period as to whether or not, because my father was born, I think it was in 1932. When did Bhaktisiddhanta leave this world?
Around
that time, maybe.
1960,
and it was like probably something about 2 months or so between the death and the rebirth when a human being leaves his body and is taken by Yamaraj.
Takes
2 months. The experience of eternal hell in the hellish planets is condensed within a 2 month period before he's moved on to the next destination. Next body, or ghostly body, or whatever. So then, whether it tallies, but I guess it could. It's possible. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati evidently had quite a number of, he had like 50,000 disciples, so I heard. These first initiates, Harinam initiated disciples. So it's possibly could have been one of them. You can see how many fallen disciples there are in ISKCON, so there must be, you know, her disciples who should have followed them. Must have been so many fallen disciples in Bhaktisiddhanta.
Was there 54
of them? It was an amazing dream. Being told in a dream that the reason why I was born as his son was to deliver him. How old are your parents now?
54.
Well, so are they unfavorable without your being in the body? Have you tried to play cartels in our kirtan? Anyway, my kirtan is a little more difficult to handle. You have to have a little training before you can deal with it.
Otherwise he might ask you to stop.
I will ask you to stop. Stop until you learn more. But you know, every journey starts with its first step. So if you haven't ventured to make a serious effort to learn how to play cartball, and by all means, start the process.
Okay, I'm trying to get your association again.
I have no problem.